Hey everybody, this is Michael and you're listening to Conversations with a Recovering Loan Officer, the show that is designed to help loan officers grow their mortgage business. We talk to top producers, marketing experts, and other inspiring people whose experience can help you reach your goals in less time. Hey you guys, welcome back to another episode of Conversations with a Recovering Loan Officer. And today I'm joined by a very special guest, Chris Sorensen. And feel free to, you know, let everyone know who you are, where you come from, sure, what your background is, what you're doing now.
Well, as we said pre-show or pre-recording, I've had a long career. So as I like to joke, I'm getting a little bit long in the tooth, but still have a lot more to give. In fact, wish me happy birthday. I'll be 59 at the end of August. So
happy birthday.
I started the business in November of 87 as a real estate agent. And like a lot of people who get into this business, I kind of fell into it. And the first 4 months had a difficult time because I thought it was going to be easy. I thought I'd be building condos in Aruba after a couple of years. It didn't happen. And then I realized that there, as my dad always said, there's no substitute for hard work. And so I'd gone to a Mike Ferry seminar, learned what to say when you're knocking on doors, and became a cold calling and door knocking fool, and became the second highest producer out of an office of 122 agents my first year in the business. And Michael, I never looked back. Once I realized, you know, I didn't like it first that I'd become a cold caller or telemarketer, but once I started discovering that there were people out there that needed my services and wanted my services, I just had to find them. You start making commission checks and all of a sudden you go from being broke to making six figures at 25 years of age. You'll start to love the business real quick. And yeah, I told myself I would never, ever be broke ever again.
So you said Mike Ferry and you said agent. So that means you were on the real estate side.
Sorry about that. I started as a real estate agent from November of 87 until January of 93. Then I went to become a loan broker working for a loan officer that I'd been using exclusively. I'm a big believer in being loyal and exercising extreme client control. So yeah, my clients use my loan officer or they didn't do business with me.
Client control.
100%. Yeah. Once you set expectations with your clients and the people around you, both personally and professionally, you're no longer let down. All it takes is a couple of times where somebody, you're showing property and maybe you spend time away from your loved ones on a weekend and then they buy from somebody else. That happened to me a couple of times and I said never again. So I sit down with any client, and I'll still do this with mortgage professionals who are working with me or branch managers, but I sit down with people and I'll let them know, here's what I expect. And now I want to hear from you. What do you expect? And I make sure that the two marry up with each other. If an agent respects loyalty, well, then damn it, give it. If you want it, then give it. I'm worth it. And I'll make darn sure, obviously, that I help put additional commission checks in your checking account every single quarter. But I also want to make sure that the time I spend away from my loved ones is time well spent. And so that's something I learned early on. Had a great career as a loan officer. Obviously, calling on real estate agents when I was a top producing agent was pretty easy. I knew what they wanted, which primarily is just pick up the damn phone and be proactive in your communication. And you can't communicate enough. And then I started calling on builders. And I got to tell you, I really enjoyed that. So I became a phenomenal. Sorry, that's going to sound braggadocious.
I think we know what you mean.
I became very good at what I was doing as a builder loan officer, and that allowed me to open up a mortgage banking firm, and everything was great until it wasn't in the Great Recession, and then I had those FedEx envelopes being delivered to me saying that, hey, people didn't make their mortgage payment, and we found something wrong, whatever means.
Yeah.
And I owe us this much money, and you know, had to give back 20 years of retirement money in a matter of a year or so. There's a lot of fun.
So that was like 07, 08.
It was 08, 09. And then during that time, not to make this my obituary, but during that time, I was called upon by the County of Riverside, California to help create a program for their employees, which turned into was the impetus to create a nonprofit called HELP, Homeownership Education Learning Program.
Yeah.
And then former Commissioner Jeff Dobby was kind enough to invite me up to Sacramento and then funded a program for the California Community College System, where I wrote a book, a school textbook called Financial Sense to White Picket Fence. And he wanted the next generation of home buyers to learn how to retain what they work so hard to obtain. And so I taught what many of us do just by nature, which is the four B's: budgeting, borrowing, buying and beyond, in which you teach people, again, how to retain what they work so hard to obtain. But that was something that fed my soul. We had a lot of great success helping a lot of people. And on my board of directors was my current CEO, who then tapped me and said, Chris, put your for-profit hat back on. I want you to help me build my retail. And that was January 2011, and we've had a phenomenal run. We went from being primarily a TPO concern to, you know, being one of the top 15 lenders in America doing business in 49 states. So I'm very honored to be part of this organization and part of this phenomenal group.
Yeah, I remember back then because I was on the broker side in California, actually, when HELP came out.
Oh, yeah.
And then I was also being on the wholesale side. I was aware of PRMG's, you know, as a business. And yeah, it felt like a hockey stick, right? It was like there were big players in the space, you know, American Pacific Mortgage. And then across the street, there was the other one right across the street from them. Can't remember the name now. And it was like, you guys just went, you know. And I've heard a lot of really great things about your guys' company as from a loan officer perspective, as far as how you, the culture and how you treat producers and just the people at the company. And you've been there for 12 years now. So, I mean, yeah. Must be something good going on.
I think there's a lot of great companies out there, of course. And I do believe, I'm a big believer in the Proverbs 17, that iron sharpens iron, right? And so good people will sharpen other good people if you're willing to be a coachable individual. But yeah, no, I just look at it this way. The loan officer and the branch manager are the only customer we need to worry about. If you take care of them, the realtor and the borrower will also end up being happy. So just make sure that they feel special. And because I've walked them on their moccasins and I've been hung up on more times than I care to mention, I've knocked on doors, I've done all the grunt work and grind that people in this business need to do to be successful. Yeah, you bet your sweet ass. If somebody, one of my loan officers needs something, I come run it.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, I mean, you're managing, what exactly is your role then at the company?
National director. I mean, it's a title. It's a long title. It's senior vice president, but it's I run retail nationally for the organization.
Okay, got it. So you are, you know, in the trenches with loan officers, and you're probably from some of them getting calls where they are, you know, scared.
Right.
You know, they've had amazing years in 2020, 2021, first half of 22, kind of like they hung in there, and now their savings is depleted potentially. And so how are you communicating with them the idea of staying positive and to find a way to move past this market?
Okay. You know, it's funny you bring that up. I had a meeting one of my meetings that I host is a monthly meeting, the third Tuesday of each month, with all of our managers. I want to make sure we disseminate information to them first so they can take it to their originators. And in the same vein, and by the way, I'm not proficient at looking at the camera. I keep wanting to look at you on my screen. So I apologize.
Oh, no, don't worry about it.
Yeah, I keep seeing you. You're so good at watching just the camera. Anyway, on point, I was frustrated because there's a lot of folks out there that are pissing and moaning. And I understand that. It is a scary time. But then I asked myself and others, compared to what? And I told a story, and I'll make it brief, but I told a story of one of the reasons why I think I'm so driven and why I will not ever accept defeat is because of my father. And I told a story, and I won't, you know, I can, it's a long story, but I'll keep it in very, very brief terms here, just the highlights. But as a young child in Fountain Valley, California, I remember watching my mother have to help my dad. My dad was working for a company called Alpha Beta, a grocery chain. He was youngest VP. He had worked himself literally almost to death. He was stamping beef in a city called Vernon, California, and collapsed. Went to the hospital, had cortisone injections. They were giving steroids and trying to save him, and he had an allergic reaction to that. Went down to 98 pounds, lost his hair and fingernails, was spent a year in the hospital, and suffered major problems from that point forward with his skin, bleeding and cracking. And so my mom would have to help him literally and walk him like a dog on all fours from their master bedroom, which did not have a bathtub, over to the other side of the house where the kids' rooms were, where we had a bathtub. And she had filled it up with a prescription tar bath. And that was how he was able to soothe the skin. He would then get up. My mom would help him wrap him in, after wrap putting his whole body lathered with the steroid cream, wrap him in saran wrap to hold the cream to his skin. He'd put on a suit and tie, and then he'd go to work for 12, 14 hours a day.
Oh, my God.
Okay? And when you watch your father go through that to make sure that you have a roof over your head and food on the table and even a Schwinn bicycle at Christmas time, what the fuck am I going to have to complain about? So when someone says, woe is me, this is a tough market, I'm like, okay, check yourself. You need to do a little bit of self-reflection and recognize just how blessed we are. You and I, we're selling. If anybody's listening to me, we're selling other people's money and getting paid handsomely for it. This business is tough, tough, tough. And thank God it is, or there'd be no money in it. It'd be further commoditized than it already is. So the fact that it takes somebody who's got grit and grind and willing to go out there and fight the good fight to succeed is a great thing. We are pruning and thinning the herd. It's biblical, for goodness sakes. That's a great thing. Those that will actually do what Todd Duncan, what Barry Habib, what Carl White, what who else? I mean, all the great coaches say the same thing. Rick Ruby. If you scrape off, you boil it long enough and scrape off the top of all their nuances, the common denominator that all the coaches out there say is, you got to make the calls. You got to ask for the business. And today, if you used to ask the business for 20, now you better ask it for 50. Because I told you, the number, I don't have all the numbers exactly, but the numbers from NAR about the their agents and how broke and poor and how few transactions they're doing is staggering. And so that, you know, Pareto in 1903 taught us what we now call the 80-20 rule. And in our business, statistically speaking, it's closer to the 90-10 rule. So 90% of the time, you're your own competition. That 10% of the time, those people, obviously, if you're a good agent, are being called on by everybody. So yes, unless you are really good at what you do and compete with people like myself, you better go after that 90%, maybe the top 20 of the 90%, but you're going to have to call 50 of them to be able to do enough business to be able to make, you know, six or multi-six-figure income.
Yep.
But so what, now what? You can complain about it, or you can just say, you know what, this is awesome. Most people are too lazy to do what I'm willing to do. And when I do have extra time, this is the perfect time for me to perfect my skill set with MBS Highway, List Reports, Mortgage Coach, you know, all the different tools that we put off learning because we're too busy. Well, if you ain't too busy now, take the time to perfect your skill set.
I think a lot of times loan officers forget that they're in the sale industry,
right?
You know, it's like your entire job is selling. Like you're just selling the product of a mortgage. And maybe you're really good at being a consultant, and maybe you're really good at helping people through the process. But at the end of the day, they have to buy for you to get paid. And there's a lot of ways to skin that cat.
Well, and one way, you know, oftentimes people who have success will self-sabotage themselves. They'll start buying cars, taking trips, and doing everything other than sticking to what allowed them to become successful in the first place. And you have to have a written plan. If it's not a writing, it doesn't exist. But if somebody actually wants to build a business and build a legacy, they've got to make sure, number one, that they're putting their goals and everything down in writing. And number two, if they're not using a CRM, and what CRM? I don't care. Just use the one that's in front of you, because the best CRM is the one you actually use every single day. But use a CRM and build a business, and that's how you build a blue sky business. If somebody were to come to me and say, Chris, let me show you, for the last 5, 10, 20 years, I've been making sure that every single one of my clients is inside my CRM. I've kept a dossier of sorts on each one of them, and this is what I send out, and here's the open rate, and here's the number of applications I take, and here's how it turns into real dollars. That's a legitimate business. If you want to avoid these wild swings, act as if you're the CEO of a publicly traded Fortune 100 corporation and go to work. What would they do?
Well, that's the problem. Most loan officers have no idea what they would do.
And that's what's sad. But here's what I would tell you. One of the great things, you know, I was blessed to have a very, very strict father who was one of the hardest working SOBs, obviously, as I just shared with you, that I ever met. And so, again, that's what drives me. But today, we have YouTube. I mean, for goodness sakes, if you want to actually look up and see what, I mean, there's TED Talks. If you want to look and see what the top, the Fortune 500 executives do, what time they show up, how well prepared they are for a meeting, just use your imagination. Do they go into any meeting unprepared? Not if they got a big, huge bonus coming. If they want to get that $5, $10, $20 million bonus, no, they make sure that everything that they do is calculated and well thought out and well prepared. They treat what they do as a true business. And you're right. Most loan officers play at this business. They don't treat it as what it really is. It's a phenomenal business that's blessed many of us. But when it's easy, it's almost too easy. It's like shooting fish in a barrel. When it becomes hard, that's when experts were back in vogue. And so if somebody's struggling, my heart goes out to you. But know this, if I only reach one person on your video, this podcast, however you're going to present it, then that's all I'm trying to do. Just one person that I can say, you know what? If you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, you have a lot more power than you're giving yourself credit for. Take the first step. The first step is writing down what you want and why you want it.
And then I think that it's common, just a common figure of speech is, you know, people aren't going to do business with you if they don't know you're in business. So how do you get out there, meet people? You know, like you said, one of the craziest business plans and simplest plans I ever heard was, I think it may have been something Rick Ruby talked about. He talked about this guy who had this index card container, and he had the name, phone number, and a couple notes about every client he ever closed or every person he ever met, right, that could transact real estate. And he just picked 10 of them out every day, called them, put it from the front to the back, and just every day, that's what he did. 10 conversations, $10 million earner, you know? Yep. I mean, and that's like, that was his whole business plan, but the consistency is what got him there.
Amen. Amen.
And I think that's really hard for a lot of loan officers, because we get in our own way when we start to have success and activities in our business take our time. You don't make time to work on your business. And so that's that, you know.
Those are the swings. And look, I mean, technology is designed for one reason, to replace us. So embrace it and make sure that you are making it your friend and capitalize on it. But it can also be a major distraction. It drives me crazy when I see people get up on a stage. I've been on stage with folks at Mastermind or others, and you have somebody who starts talking about all the lead aggregation that they're able to do and that they're generating hundreds and thousands of leads. And of course, all the neophytes who are looking for a quick, easy out go and gravitate to them and want to know how they're doing it. And they'll even buy, you know, their services. And it's sad, because if you watch their numbers, I'll bet you dollars of donuts that 99% of them are doing less business than when, or no more business than after having that conversation or buying those wares. Because it is. It's consistently applying certain key techniques that will allow you to be successful, even if that technique is as simple as picking up an index card and making a phone call. Yep. But technology can, you know, combined with your hard work, can make things more robust. It allows you to scale your business. And one of the things that I did is I looked at the top 1% and discovered what tools those people are using to be able to help advance their careers. So we went to those vendors, we created enterprise relationships, we spent years, frankly, making sure that they're all fully integrated with our LOS and our CRM, so we could help create automatic campaigns without the loan officer really having to do too much. We want them to, but if they just take a little bit of effort and go to the training and learn the systems, so much of this stuff is done automatically, which will allow them to make those 10 phone calls using the index cards, because their follow-up and their low status notifications and, like through Sales Boom, the monitoring of their clients is being done automatically for them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sorry to get excited, but today's technology, I am amazed at it. God, how many times could I have been retired over if I had today's technology back when I was out there knocking on doors and cold calling 100 people a day?
Yeah. And I didn't actually give you any of my background, but that's what I do today. I'm a technology founder. So I completely agree with you wholeheartedly. There's technology that can improve your customer's experience, that can empower you to be more scalable, but to allow you to focus more on the core competency of what it is to run a business, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that is a super important thing. So, you know, what sort of cadence or, you know, are you suggesting for somebody? I mean, I know that the answer might be like as much as possible, but if you can kind of chunk it down to something that's manageable for loan officers today to kind of get over that hurdle, what kind of call cadence or who should they be talking to today?
Uh-huh. Yeah, look, I mean, the shotgun approach obviously can work just by happenstance, right? You know, like I think what appealed to me going back to Mike Ferry's comment is, and I'm paraphrasing, but he's been fairly consistent in his message, which is, look, ask 100 people for the business, and even if you suck at your job, one person's going to say yes, even if it's on out of pity. And so my role I looked at in the beginning, because I wasn't that good at my job as a real estate agent that first year, was, well, I can find 99 people to tell me to go pound sand. And that was I made it a game. How fast can I get 99 rejections? I didn't get to 99 before I got a yes. And that was the most exciting thing, is that I figured out, man, by getting rejected over and over and over and over again, you really learn almost how to anticipate somebody's objection and handle it. So I'll give you a couple of things that have helped me.
Great.
Not necessarily cadence, but just a couple of things that helped me. Number one, as I said, there's four keys to success. Number one, decide what you want. As simple as it sounds, it ain't that easy. You need to sit down and ponder that. Number two, decide what you're willing to give up for it. Whether it be personal or professional, you know, if you want something, it's going to take a certain sacrifice. Number three, set your priorities. And again, all this is written down. And then number four, go to work. Go do it. I would also say that there was a formula that I used to help me when I was having so many conversations with the consumer, whether it be at a listing appointment, whether it be taking an application for a loan. I always wanted to put the person in charge of my career. So one of the things I do is I'd say, Michael, please make me the best loan officer that I can be. In fact, my stated goals, you know what my expectations are, is that you'll refer me even to your own mother. And so can you please describe for me what that loan officer does or will do that you're going to say, that's the person I'm going to do business with now and into the future? Because after all, I'm not looking for a commission check. Let me be honest with you. I'm looking for a lifetime of commission checks. So please explain to me what I need to be doing. Well, they'll tell you what you need to tell them in order to win their business, whether you're taking a listing or you're asking for an application. And by the way, Fannie Mae studies show that 70% of the loans they purchase, the first loan officer who took the application is the one who closed the transaction. So speed to lead means everything. You've got to get to the client first. It's not the rate. Look, we're a three-channel company. We support correspondent, wholesale, and retail. But I will tell you that the IMBs are still doing 2.5 times the business, even in this market, that the brokers are doing. Why? Because of technology and control. And so use that to your advantage if that's you. And if pricing is what you're selling, then sell the hell out of it, obviously, along with your good looks and charm. But get out there and sell. Oh, another side note, sell is something that's very important. My research indicates, and I've heard this before, that sales is a derivative of a root word from selzig, a Scandinavian word meaning to serve. So at its core, if you're selling with the right heart, it's actually serving others. And so I have coined a phrase, especially when I was doing my nonprofit work, serve for success. The more people you go out there to serve without an immediate expectation of gratification, the more opportunities are going to be presented to you. I promise you.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Lately, I've been feeling more, and that's kind of the part of the reason for the podcast, is you're going to get back what you give.
Yeah.
And so just focus on giving, whether that's consulting or helping, coaching, whatever, it will come back to you, like the law of reciprocity, karma, whatever you want to call it, the secrets, you know, it doesn't matter, law of attraction. It will happen, but you've got to help first. And so I love that idea. And, you know, when you say, you know, you give your four goals, I'm assuming a part of... Yes. I'm guessing a business plan is a part of that. Now, I know that running a business is one of the core things you have to learn when you run a business is how to write a business plan. So,
well, not anymore. Now you have Chat GPT, right? So you just ask for a business plan. You can have it in 30 seconds better than somebody coming from Yale could write it. That's incredible.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I mean, if you know how to prompt. So, okay. So throw that out. Don't learn how to write a business plan. Learn how to prompt Chat GPT, right? That's the only thing.
I'm telling you, I'm sure you've played with it. It is kind of scary. One of my friends asked it to write a poem about the sunset. It was one of the most beautiful poems I'd ever read. And I'm telling you, it's going to be amazing to see how professors at schools are going to be able to kind of make sure their students are actually learning and not just going to ChatGPT. But anyway, sorry for jumping on you there.
No, it's good. I mean, I am a technology guy, so I love that side of the business for sure. And I've heard the rumor is that there are going to be ways to validate whether it's something that's been written by AI or not. And so there's these two different types of businesses right now. There's the people diving directly into AI and how to advance it, and there's the people how to detect AI, you know, so that you can basically like defunk what they're doing. It's kind of weird.
Well, I'm imagine if you think about it, I imagine you could ask ChatGPT if what was written was written by AI or not. It might be able to reveal if that's the case.
So we are just starting to leverage AI in our business. We've rolled it out on the support side of our SaaS company. So when a customer of ours writes to us that they had a question about how to use something in our platform, it will go into our archives and into our guides, and it has digested all the information in there, and it will come back and self-write the answers to their question. It takes pieces from each guide and then presents it to them. And it's working pretty well. We're getting about 40% support closure rate on questions that are asked, and about 20 to 30% of the rest of them, it's because we don't have the right guide to support the machine learning. And the rest of it is, well, because it's like user error or a bug or something like that we actually have to address in person. And so my team has recently been playing around at the same concept, but on the mortgage side. So what we're developing in-house now is a way for a mortgage company to create a series of extremely detailed guides for getting a mortgage.
Okay.
And then we're going to plug that into phones, texts, email, chat on the websites, so that when your consumers, your home buyers, or whoever you're doing loans for, your realtors even, have a question, you can essentially set a framework to say, go through this first. And if the answer is successful, they'd say, hey, that's a great answer. That's what I was looking for. Then they don't have to come directly to you, but there's still an exchange of value because they got the information through your service. And
well, let's make sure there's a push notification so that the law officer knows somebody used their service, so they have a reason to follow up.
Yes, exactly. So there's going to be a whole... There's layers to that, but yeah, absolutely, because I don't want to remove the loan officer from their job, right? My goal is to help loan officers be more productive and focus on activities that drive more business. And that's just one of the things that, you know, I feel like is pretty interesting idea.
Well, we've worked for years to make sure that we have, in our humble opinion, the best marketing tech stack out there, fully integrated. You know, people can have tools, but if they're not integrated with your systems and all communicating effectively, you're going to be found wanting. You're going to be on the outside looking in. There's a lot of companies that are Circuit City that just don't realize it yet. You know, they're out of business and it's just a matter of time. Yeah, and as I mentioned earlier, that thinning of the herd is actually a good thing. So one of my closing thoughts is please, 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 man, if you want to be in this business and thrive in 24 and 25, just grind it out. And I think the MBA said there's going to be roughly 30% of the top 1,000 that are going to be out of business by the end of this year or first quarter of 2024. So,
yeah, I mean,
there's a lot more carnage yet to come.
What was that number? 60,000 loan officers did not renew in 2023. That's a massive number.
Brother, listen, there's a lot of people that are in this space that don't know there's a TN mortgage, and they have no business being in the business. And so I'm okay with that. you know, they need to go and do something that is more akin to what they're wanting to do. This was easy money for too many people. But for those of us like you and me who are committed to the space, yeah, clear path, because I'm coming through. I'm going to run your ass over if you get in my way.
Or you're going to give great value to everyone who wants to invest time. And
I say that with tongue in cheek. I don't want to leave that one hanging there. I do believe that everybody on this call, if you're a mortgage professional, you better have a little bit of that killer instinct. You can be graceful and you can tithe and you can do everything you need to do, obviously, to be a good, balanced human being. You know, but you've got to have that killer instinct to push yourself every single day to get through what is going to be a challenging market for the next couple of quarters.
Yep. Awesome. Chris, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate you joining me for this episode. And it was great to meet you.
You as well. You as well.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks, man.
Bye. Sweet.